Hour number two, kick it off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Let's hit some hour two headlines. Catch us up on what we missed last night, Sam.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In the NHL last night, talked about it a little bit, but the Preds stay alive. They force a game six. Take that one 2-1 in Vancouver. A lot of third period action there. All of it in the third period. Canucks strike early. Preds get too late, and they will head back to Nashville, hoping to keep that series alive. Islanders and the Hurricanes. Hurricanes won that one 6-3. They win that series in five games. And the Avs and Jets also finishes 6-3 final. Avs win that one in five as well. And the Maple Leafs won in overtime 2-1 against the Bruins. They also force a game six. So two NHL series down. You'll see the Hurricanes and the Rangers next round, which will be a very good series. NHL, I feel like, has been historically for like years past, I feel like this first round has been pretty boring. Normally you get some good like game sevens and stuff like that in the first round. You just haven't really had that so far this year.
Does the NHL have the big markets alive? I saw the Rangers are good, but like are there any of the premier franchises still kind of kicking around? I don't even know who the hell the premier franchises are outside of like the Blackhawks and
Rangers
and Bruins, I guess.
Yeah, Bruins are in. I mean, Bruins Maple Leafs is a big name series for sure. I feel like you kind of had some tough matchups that you knew that weren't going to be amazing. Knights and Stars is a good series. That one's
that's one versus eight, right? Been. That's the kind of like the Preds, I guess, and Canucks.
Yeah, a little bit. And then every other series is basically 3-1. So, yeah, I feel like NHL is kind of moving on to round two and hoping that you get some more entertaining product through there. In the MLB, Mike Trout, we're talking about him yesterday. Turns out if you bat leadoff, you might tear your meniscus too.
Which, by the way, I did get some data on that. 28 extra at-bats per year. My rough math didn't do the job, but Fangraphs has an article about it. So, yeah, go to hell, Sam.
Well.
No. Go to hell. Go to hell, Sam.
Well, he's not playing anymore.
Well, I don't have a comeback for that. The injury concerns, I don't really know about that. But, yeah, no, it's so the breakdown is you get 14 more at-bats, first to second. 28 more at-bats, first to third, 41, 53, 67. So that's kind of the breakdown on average in an MLB season.
My point was just that.
No, your point was that it's
first
not.
First three batters, it's not like a huge difference.
It's 30 more at-bats per year.
Yeah, I mean, that's big. But I think when you get to fourth and, like you're saying, and you get to the 50-something at-bats, that's a lot more significant.
Well, yeah. Obviously.
That's what I was saying.
In what world would Ronald Acuna bat fifth in a lineup, though, Sam?
I'm just saying that.
So why were you even saying that? Why was that the argument? In what world would Ronald Acuna be batting fifth or sixth, huh?
No, in no world.
And in some worlds, he'd be batting third. You know, your power, you know, he's got power. He's the best hitter. That was my point, was that these guys are now batting first, not fifth. No one's arguing fifth. Don't try to gaslight me.
I'm not trying to gaslight. You're trying to gaslight me. I was arguing that the first inning.
No, what
the first inning?
What? No, what you were arguing is that over the course of a season, it doesn't. You said maybe one or two, maybe like three or four extra at bats. Once in a blue moon.
I said like 15.
Oh.
One or two.
You said 10.
Absolutely not what I said.
And then you laughed at me.
Absolutely not what I said.
You laughed at me. Once in a blue moon, I think was the word you used. Once in a blue moon.
So Trout's not going to be out for the season, though, right?
It doesn't seem like it, no. Mike Trout, torn meniscus, but is definitely out for a couple months.
The Angels will be dead by the time he gets back.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the classic Angels. Mike Trout gets hurt, and they're like, well, he could come back for the year, and then they're going to just be terrible.
How old is Mike Trout at this point?
He's like getting up there.
35? He's not that old. 30, 32, 33?
I would guess he's like 31 or 32.
Wow.
32,
yeah.
33 in August.
Yeah, he gets hurt every year, man. It's sad. Such a great player. His career just kind of hampered by injuries, really, in terms of being able to He just needs to get away from L.A.
too. Has he reached the point where he'll be a what-could-have-been story?
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't made the playoffs.
Yeah, and there's part of me that's like, I want to give him a tip of the hat because he's stuck it out with the Angels. However, I don't know. You could also argue that that's like an easy way out. You're just kind of taking the paycheck and, oh, boom, I'm hurt. And it's frustrating. You know, I'm sure he wants to play, but I'd love to see him in a lineup that's, you know, elite. I don't know if we'll ever see that, though.
When you have no salary cap and you can just, like, take the contract anywhere, it just it doesn't feel as right, you know?
Well, also, I'll be a little fair that, like, for the last 3 or 4 years, he also had Shohei Ohtani with him. So, like, it wasn't like the Angels weren't trying. Like, they tried to put – it wasn't like he was wasting away in, like, some – mediocre franchise. They were trying to be good. It wasn't like he was sitting there just like, I'm gonna collect a check and I'm gonna be A-Rod and stay in Texas on those Rangers teams forever. Like, they were trying to accomplish things, they just weren't good enough.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think he could really force a trade, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, while they had Ohtani and had signed Rendon and like was trying to put a winner around him. Now, like, the franchise is obviously incompetent, and I think it's more on them that they just haven't traded these guys. Like, they're doing the half measures in terms of, we got stars, but we're not actually going to invest in pitching and find any pitching.
Yeah.
And hey, come watch these guys hit balls.
Rendon's been such a disappointment,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's been a disappointment.
I couldn't believe it. I thought that was a great get for them when they signed him, but
ever since he got to L.A., he's been a terrible disappointment.
I mean, he's kind of openly just been like, oh, I like the money. I don't really love baseball this much.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what he's been saying? Is this kind of
he
open,
said that
like,
back in Washington, too, but I think that Washington just had a much better feel on like who he was as a person and around the locker room and stuff like that.
Well, but also he was in Washington as the face of the franchise, and I know like he's not the face of the franchise in LA, but they paid him like a superstar. I feel like when he was in Washington, I mean, he was a really good player, but I don't think like he wasn't breaking the bank, right? I mean, like, he was still kind of on his first deals there.
Yeah, no, I mean, he definitely was not their number one guy back there in Washington.
You feel for the Angels just because they're out there kind of in LA, but they're not really thought of as LA's team, and they're kind of in a big market, but they don't really get the big market feel, but they've always tried to make splash signings. I mean, they tried to pay Albert Pujols all that money, they tried to pay Rendon all that money, and now they're just kind of on the wrong side of two of the worst contracts that baseball's given out over the last, you know, 20 years.
Their pitching is always an abomination. Yeah, it's horrible, like you were saying.
10 years since their last postseason appearance.
Yeah. Hard to believe they won it all. It's been a while, but.
Yeah.
I was so sad that series. I don't know why, but I guess I just loved Barry Bonds as a kid. I thought he was really cool. So I was rooting so hard for them to win that World Series. I really hated it. Troy Percival, was he on that team?
Yes, he was. He was the closer.
Yeah, I hated him. Barry Bonds hit that ball like 500 feet against him. That was really cool. And was it who was the little guy
for
the Angels? It was a little second base. Was it Exley or something like that?
Eckstein.
I hated Eckstein.
Yeah, he came over from the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Pedroia before Dustin Pedroia, just a little scrappy.
Yeah,
scrappy. I hated Eckstein.
David Eckstein, was that him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had me so rolled up back in when I was like 12, just watching those damn West Coast games, mad. Quit walking Barry. Would Barry bat leadoff in today's game?
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't think so.
He just walks so much. I mean, he's like an automatic person on base.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know obviously, like, hey, he's the power hitter, 3 or 4, but kind of like what we talked about with the analytics movement, like, I feel like if you could guarantee that your guy's going to be on base 60% of the time in the leadoff spot.
How many times he walked, I feel like you almost have to.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure there were a lot of games that year that ended with him in the on-deck circle.
You'd lose out on some RBIs for sure, but that'd be – Billy Bean would love that one, the money ball. Just get him on base.
I feel like you'd be more reluctant to walk him intentionally.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, if you're leading the game off, let's just say first inning, for example, like, you're not going to walk the leadoff hitter on purpose. Whereas if you get through the first two batters and there's nobody on, one out, like, you probably, hey, just walk him. Jeff Kent ain't going to do nothing. I don't know.
Take your licks on your Barry Bonds solo homers.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Like, just, hey, if he leads the game off with a home run, so what? Yeah. He's never going to hit a 3-run home run in the first inning, I'll tell you that much. I don't know.
Well, I think – not. I was trying to look up Trout's stolen bases. Trout actually is known to steal a base here and there. Bonds never did. That might be the other rationale to, you know, go lead off.
Bonds did back, you know, in the early days.
I mean, yeah, the pre-juice.
Yeah, before
era.
The pre-juice. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I guess he got too big.
Yeah.
28 stolen bases in 98.
Yeah, he used to steal bags a decent bit, but
that was a lot back then.
It was.
Anyways, any other headlines?
In the NBA, Bojan Bogdanovic for the Knicks set to undergo some season-ending wrist surgery and foot surgery for him.
You start playing around with those injuries, Knicks, then all of a sudden you're going in with a makeshift group at Game 7. I really don't want the Sixers to win the series.
Me neither.
But I want Game 7. I wouldn't be mad, I guess, if they won the series, but, like, Embiid's the heel that you don't want to root for.
Yeah, I don't like rooting for Embiid.
But also at the same time, I've liked Embiid for most of his career, so, like, I do kind of want him to have a playoff moment just because his whole career has been mired by postseason failures. I feel the same way about James Harden and that series, you know, with them going up against Luka and the Mavs. James Harden is kind of a heel in the sense of, like, this guy just gets into a situation, then eats his way out of it, just threatens to put on the fat suit and just quit trying. And like, okay, we'll send you to the next team you want to go to. And like, he's just living the life. Hey, I don't want to be in Oklahoma City anymore. Okay, well, here's your team in Houston. Hey, I don't want to be in Houston. Okay, well, here's Kevin Durant in New York City. Okay, now here you are in Philadelphia with Embiid. Okay, that didn't work. How about you go to the Clippers in Los Angeles and play with Kawhi and Paul George? He just keeps falling up somehow. So, like, he's not the villain you usually want to root for. Those are the guys you kind of hate in sports. But there's a part of me that wants him to kind of break through and have some playoff moments just because he's been such a good player, but everyone makes fun of him for his failures. I feel a little bit like that with Embiid. Kind of a softy. I like the narrative. I like redemption. You build him up, you tear him down, then you get redeemed. That's what the playoffs so far have been for me.
Yeah.
Chances at redemption. Playoff P, same way everyone's made fun of Paul George for the last seven or eight years.
Playoff P. I love when Barkley and those guys, they were ripping him when he wasn't playing well in the playoffs. Yeah, there's Playoff P.
Playoff P. You, a guy who the only big shot he had made was in a Gatorade commercial for most of his career. Like he filmed himself hitting a game winner for Gatorade. That was the only clutch shot he'd ever hit.
I think it's the fans of Philly that I don't want to win. I think I'm fine with the players on Philly winning, but I don't like their city winning anything.
Okay.
I don't like the city of Philadelphia.
Okay. I'm not going to push back on that. I like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so I got a little bit of a soft spot for them. But, like, they're sports fans. I hate the Eagles fans.
Yeah.
I hate fans of the Eagles. And I don't really have any – well, I guess I do have skin in the game with A.J. Brown. I was going to say, usually I don't have, like, any reason to dislike Eagles fans, but I do dislike Eagles fans.
I probably just loop them in there. Honestly,
yeah, but I mean, I'm sure there is a big crossover there.
Yeah, they just—I don't know—they just rubbed me the wrong way.
Oh, the process! We're so smart. We invented losing. We invented. Yeah. Let's just lose. Let's be really bad.
We justified losing.
This is how whatever you like, you know, hedge fund guy and people that come in and gut companies. They know all about this, but we're gonna do it in sports. We're so smart. It's like Nate Oates shooting threes. Oh, you're the first two that's ever decided to lose. The process. Well, all you got was Joel Embiid, and you ain't made a conference finals. So there's a part of me that wants them to keep losing. But there's also a part that wants to see.
And those New York teams just never have, like, a fun team to root. Like, I feel like the Knicks are also a team where it's like, oh, I'd like to see them lose. Like, I feel like this team is pretty likable.
Yeah, I do find them likable, but I am weary of Knicks fans. As being like the, oh, golly gee, happy to be here. Like, we're one series away from them becoming really annoying, too.
Getting out in the streets after every win.
Yeah, like, I still have a little, you know, a little laughing at them, you know, in terms of the way they were celebrating winning one game against the Hawks and how they've kept the bleep Trae Young chant alive for years, even though Trae stole their soul. Like, I mean, like, I do find them to be a little corny, but I have enjoyed this season. I don't know, I'm torn. Any other headlines we need to hit?
If you care about Tiger Woods apparel line coming out, it debuts today, Sunday Red.
I don't care about that. But
he went on Jimmy Fallon last night.
I saw him on Jimmy Fallon. I saw him talking about the tree memes. He has seen the tree memes.
Yeah.
I think
Tiger's a little tapped into social media now.
I don't think Jimmy Fallon shared the one about that night on Thanksgiving weekend, though. Him running into the tree with his car. I don't think Jimmy Fallon shared that one.
Probably a good move.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive though too, so I don't think anyone's gonna be buying.
That's what I was gonna look up. Like, so how much is the red polo costing? Like $115 is my guess.
Polos are $120 to $150.
Oh my god.
A ball marker, $50.
Wow.
What's a typical good ball marker cost you? If you're getting like a good one, like is this even a good one? Like the
25 cents. Just put a damn quarter on the green. Like it doesn't matter.
I know people have like the nice metal ones or something. I don't know.
People buy them, but I'm just saying, like, don't spend $50 on a ball marker. Just like get some change out of your car before you go play.
But Nike has ball markers, right? Like semi nice ball markers. Like how much do you know how much those cost?
$20 maybe.
Okay, so yeah,
isn't it for like a nice one, I would assume.
Well, that's why I was comparing like Tigers to how much more expensive is it?
There's way too much good apparel out there that's cheaper. It's really well made.
Yeah, but it's not named after the goat.
I don't know. I'm still not sure I like the logo. It reminds me of like a skeleton or something. It's weird.
The first reply to all the pricing breakdowns that I saw on Twitter was just, cost me $10 just to browse the website.
Is that a bad look if you're Tiger?
How expensive that stuff is?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, is that a bad look if you're Tiger?
I don't know.
Because you got all the money in the world. Like, you don't need money.
I feel like his Nike line was pretty expensive, though, too.
Yeah, but that's kind of out of his hands. At least if you're a fan, you'd be like, hey, that's Nike.
Yeah.
Tigers aren't the ones setting the prices, but like when it's his company, it feels like he's the one setting the prices. Maybe you want it to be exclusive. Maybe for Tiger Woods, you're like, hey, I don't want everyone wearing it. I want only the elite to wear it, the people that really love me. But like, I feel like if you're directly setting the price, it's kind of a bad look. Now, maybe Tiger doesn't care and he's always kind of been a jerk and maybe this is just him and he can always claim he doesn't set the prices or not even answer questions about it. But to me, I don't know. You tell me it's that expensive, like it's kind of a bad move.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
Unless you just don't want to ship a lot of this stuff. Maybe that's it. Maybe like they don't want to have to manufacture and if it's cheaper, more people would buy it. Maybe they want not a lot of orders. Maybe he just wants to wear it on the course himself. Have his own brand and then maybe, like I said, gatekeep it and have it be more exclusive. Bob, does it all come down to money?
All comes down to money. You know that.
Would he make more money selling more product, though, if he lowered the price point? Like, that's the question.
Yeah,
right?
that's a great question. That would be my recommendation, but there's probably brand experts that feel otherwise, right? They don't want to dilute the brand.
If you're a Tiger super fan, like, are you really not going to buy it because it's maybe $40 more expensive? Maybe. Maybe golf's just an expensive game anyways in terms of getting out there and you got to pay to look good. I personally prefer inward half.
Yeah. I was just saying, man. I like my inward half shirts.
Yeah. Cheaper than Tiger's.
Yes, they were.
More cost efficient. You don't want to use the word cheap, but talking about sponsors. More cost efficient. More affordable.
You can get a couple inward half shirts.
That's true.
Doesn't have a dumb logo either. Great logo.
Now, I will say the guys at Inward Half never won, how many majors? 14, 13, whatever number he's at. That's never happened either. But they've also never,
they're major champions of apparel making.
Been mired in scandal because they took a few too many pain pills and had their wife go through their phone and then hit them with golf clubs and then chase them down the street. Never had that happen either. I would have heard about it in the news. Didn't happen.
Teach their own.
Yeah. So everyone has different, different paths in life. Everyone has different paths. Good batch of headlines, Sam. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Realize the team's gear just...
Tennessee baseball took on a bad loss yesterday in the midweek. Bad loss as they fall to Lipscomb. Sam, you worried about the lineup? A little bit of a slump right now.
Yeah, a little bit of a slump. A little bit of a slump right now. I'm not worried, though. I think you'll be fine. I honestly think I saw Russell's tweet talking about how this baseball team needs a little bit of a wake-up call, and that wasn't exactly the wake-up call you wanted, but, you know, I do think with having a weekend of probably not having the hottest bats that you would have expected, especially against a team like Missouri, and then you drop a midweek game. I don't think dropping one midweek game is exactly, you know, it happens probably once every year for Vitello. It doesn't happen more than once, I would say, but the bats are not the hottest right now, and you know, your bullpen kind of got touched up a little bit, but I think that'll be good. I think you'll see a very motivated Tennessee team going down to Gainesville this weekend.
To me, the pitching, I'm not really worried about that, just because, you know, you save your best arms for the weekend. Yeah. Especially, it's, you know, even more important whenever you're looking at a Thursday turnaround versus a Friday turnaround. You know, that's obviously one less day to rest. So you're even going to be a little bit more cautious in those weeks. The pitching, I'm not really worried about. To me, it was the timely hitting or lack thereof that also was there in the Missouri series. It's just kind of a carryover from that. But, you know, baseball, we know there's ebbs and flows, and we know this lineup's good. But it does seem like maybe it's headed to a little bit of a slump coming out of that Kentucky series. Maybe.
You know, it's definitely fair to say.
You score six combined runs the final two games against Missouri. Whenever Missouri doesn't have a strong pitching staff, to me that's a little bit alarming. The Saturday game especially, right? You scored three runs in the first and then got shut out for eight innings. Like that's a little bit alarming.
Happened again last night where you get a couple runs early and then you're just kind of playing catch up ever since.
Yeah, well, they were up 4-1 early. And
so then, yeah, you scored, what, two runs and then the final seven innings of that game?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I listened to Vitello's post-game press conference, and you touched on it, John. He mentioned the fact that going on the road and playing Thursday instead of Friday doesn't give you much chance to – you got to really wash this out of your hair pretty quickly. There's just not really time to dwell on it, not time to really work on anything. It's just got to get back at it. And I guess that's the best way to approach it right now. Maybe it's good that they have to just get back on the field.
Yeah, I don't know how they feel inside the clubhouse or on the bus or plane or whatever the hell they're traveling to Gainesville in. I don't know how they feel there, but as a fan, from a fan perspective, I'm glad we're playing Thursday because, yeah, you don't have to really dwell on this. And it's, you know, take today, figure it out, wipe it clean, and then, yeah, you're back on Thursday. And the pressure's on now because we talked, you know, we had that scenario where you're like looking at, you know, permutations and combinations of how many road wins, how many home wins, and you kind of penciled in, yeah, you're going to go 3-0 in the midweek games at home. So here's what you need to do in the SEC series. Well, now that changes because your RPI did fall from 5 to 8, I believe. Of course, top 8 teams get locked in as super regional hosts. So like now Tennessee, I don't want to say is like right there on the cutoff because I do think they have a little bit more wiggle room than that, but they definitely have to perform now this weekend in Gainesville. Like if you drop 2 out of 3 into Florida, there's a chance you go into next week on the outside looking in of a top 8 seed. Is that fair to say, Sam?
Yeah, I think that is probably fair to say.
Obviously, that's going to depend on what other teams do across the conference and across the country, but like, I do think, like,
in terms of controlling your own destiny.
Right. I think losing yesterday made this a must-win series this weekend, at least whenever we get to, you know, Monday.
It feels like you're going to need to almost maybe even sweep one of these series kind of coming in, whether that be South Carolina at home or if you can do it to a Florida team that's, you know, that's obviously struggled in SEC play, but a Florida team that's also kind of got their back against the wall there. Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely you're going to have to win every series now. And, you know, I think if you want to really, really, really solidify yourself as one of those top eight teams to try and you know, host that super regional, I think you'll definitely need to get it going here, you know, towards the back end of the season.
Lipscomb had a couple bats, man.
Four
home runs. They had two guys. Vergara hit two home runs, went 3 for 4. Coppedge, I was listening on the radio when he went 4 for 4, had a home run. I mean, The only pitching that I know Tony talked a little bit about Benke struggling a little bit, but also we've been talking so much about Marcus Phillips, and I guess, again, they got to get him out there and just get some innings in for him. But he, you know, 2 innings pitched, 3 earned runs given up. I don't know. Again, probably from a fan perspective, we just got to think about it the same way the coaches do. They just got to move on because now it gets real with the series.
Yeah, no, I think we can maybe put to bed the late season aspirations that Marcus Phillips was going to morph into last year's Chase Burns and kind of give you that arm.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not disqualifying him from being a guy if you need an out where I'll lose the confidence in him coming in and being able to do that. But, yeah, like when you get touched up by Lipscomb, it does maybe slow that down a bit. Don't want to overreact, of course, to
– right.
To one outing, one performance, but it does seem like you know what they say about Lindsey Nelson, man, the ball just flies out. What can you do? What can you do? It's home runs, they just fly out. The wind was blowing out, I assume. I don't know. You know, they say when it gets hotter, the wind blows out. It was kind of hot yesterday.
Thankfully, I haven't seen much on social media. To your point, you don't want to overreact. I haven't seen much like, you know, this team's in trouble or anything like that. It's like it's a bump in the road, man. It happens. And maybe it gets their attention, like Russell said, just kind of a wake-up call.
Well, that's the hope.
Yeah.
That's the hope. The hope is that you – like, the dream is you win these games close. Like, hey, that Missouri series, the last 2 games, I don't want to say felt like losses, but you didn't get to strut your stuff. You didn't get to run rule. You didn't get to, like, you know, fly around the bases, hit a bunch of bombs. So you almost got to come out of those series thinking, hey, yeah, you swept, but you also got some stuff to work on. That's the dream, is having those. You don't want to take a loss to have to reset, but sometimes it's necessary, and you have to, you know, try to use a loss for a positive. So if Tennessee responds and comes out and sweeps Florida this weekend, it feels like this loss is worth it. They come out and drop 2 out of 3 or get swept by Florida, then, yeah, like it feels like this loss demoralized the team and there's real warning signs. So now it just kind of depends on what you do this weekend, and then we'll make our decision about what this game yesterday meant.
Yeah. Bottom of the 7th, Tennessee had the bases loaded, no outs. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, we're good, man. This is going to be fine, you know, and only got 1 run out of that. That was the frustrating part. But again, that's what's nice about this team. I mean, I never for a moment till it was the 9th inning, you know, with an out or two, it was like I never for a moment thought it was over. You know, this team's got enough juice, but they just got to get it going again.
You had the Billy Amick homer, and then, you know, I think you had some warning track power right after that, and everyone was kind of getting, ooh, maybe we got something here, but
yeah.
Yeah, definitely not something that is a red flag, but it's one that you kind of perk your eye up a little bit.
Well, like I said, it's one that changes the stakes this weekend, in my opinion, if you're trying to host a super regional, which I think that's the goal. It makes Florida a must-win series. And like I said, we'll decide on what yesterday meant by how we play this weekend. If you come out and you respond on Thursday and you beat their ass, you look good, okay, that was the loss you needed to get going. If you come out and you still can't hit, you start saying, huh, this team's losing their confidence. Tennessee's been obviously really, really good with the bases loaded this year.
Yeah.
So it was kind of
very good.
Kind of funny that it was Lipscomb that cracked the code of like, hey, Tennessee, we can keep these runners on base. Don't worry about it. There's a couple times that happened last night. Any other thoughts on Tennessee baseball?
Yeah, they take off this afternoon. I'm guessing they're flying, I would think.
I would imagine, but yeah. I just don't know.
That'd be a brutal drive.
I don't know what the baseball budget is. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, you would think they wouldn't have to hop on the bus to ride 8 to 10 hours down there. You would think. Surely Danny's going to treat the boys properly.
Yeah, come on. Went to a College World Series last year.
Yeah, come on.
We're not bus boys.
You're right. Up on the plane. I'm excited for the series. I mean, I don't know if I'm more excited after the loss. I don't think that's the case, but it does, to me, become more intriguing. I'm more interested in that Thursday game, seeing how they respond.
Yeah, and I'm, again, they're all big series to us, obviously, but I'm getting so pissed at ESPN. First game's ESPN2. The last two games are SEC Network Plus. It's like, I guess maybe that's probably a commentary on where Florida's at record-wise and everything, but still, I just hate. I was thinking about it last night. I was complaining about it to my wife when I was logging on. I hate ESPN Plus. Hate it.
The last time Tennessee lost, they came out and scored, what, 5 runs in the first inning?
That sounds right.
That Saturday game against Kentucky. Was it 5 in the first? Maybe 6 in the first, whatever it was.
It might have even been more than 5.
Yeah, I think it was 5.
They were hot, though, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it was 5 in the first, got an additional run in the second.
You could tell they were pissed, too.
Right, so they responded. So, like, the last time they lost, they came out and they said, hey, this is who we actually are. So maybe you get that on Thursday night against Florida. Maybe. I hope so. Will they be throwing their stud on Thursday? Is he going to be there? Will they keep him on Friday, like maybe game 2?
I'm not sure what their rotation has been, to be quite honest with you,
okay,
so far.
Well, I'll give you a day to figure it out. We'll do the little preview tomorrow. So you ain't got to figure it out yet.
I would guess he's there day 2 or 3, honestly. I don't think he's there day 1.
All about how you handle losing in sports. I think we're going to try to figure that out this upcoming football season with Colorado. They were back in the news yesterday. Man, this team is insufferable. We'll talk about them next. Stick with us. Cruising down the street in my 6-4. Blowing Kush smoke out the window. Right. Pockets full of hundreds, no singles. Pockets full of hundreds, no singles. Let's talk some college football on this hump day. Colorado is going to be one of the teams that you pay attention to this year. Not necessarily because of what they do on the field, but that is the Deion Sanders effect. But so far this offseason, it's got a drastically different feel than it did last year. A drastically different feel. And yesterday, we'd kind of briefly touched on it, Bob, with the Athletic pieces about the transfers getting out of there and kind of talking about the toxicity and the way Deion handles it. Well, of course, in typical Sanders family fashion, Shador wanted to get on social media and make himself a talking point as he quote tweeted and basically was like, we don't even know this guy. He must have sucked because I don't even know who he is. To which everyone in the replies are just like, so you're kind of proving the point that all the players weren't unified and all the players mattered and all this, like how you treated certain people. And the narrative is like, hey, if you didn't transfer in with Deion, you kind of got lost in the shuffle and he didn't really want to coach you up and the players didn't really care about you.
Yeah. I think that, this is like they're pouring gas on the fire at this point. And that's another great example of it. I'm also seeing some back and forth that's happening where, you know, there's some media in the Boulder area or in the, you know, Colorado or Denver area that are basically trying to defend what's going on at Colorado and what Deion's doing about, you know, building that program up from the bottom, basically. And this is what happens with programs, et cetera. Now national media is coming back saying you guys are actually it's nonsense and you're working and living in fear of keeping Deion happy, the team you cover. So, I mean, it's taken on a life of its own in a lot of different ways. But most importantly, it's what's going on with the players. And the exodus is real. And you're hearing from some of these players who are, you know, they're kids, but they're grown men enough to know that they're saying, this isn't how I want to be handled. I'm better than this. Somebody said they're, you know, kind of funny because of Deion talking about his Louis Vuittons in the past and everything, but some, you know, some people are saying, yeah, you know, I think somebody said, I don't want to be treated like a piece of luggage. That's all I feel like right now.
I think there's maybe something to the complaints that I've seen from people that are supporting Colorado, either Colorado fans or just Deion Sanders fans. I do think there's some truth to the idea of just like, hey, the athletic, stop calling everybody that transfers looking for bad stories. Like, you could do that to almost any program, right? Like, if seven guys transfer out of Tennessee and you call seven of them, are one or two of them going to be willing to say, like, hey, the coach has overlooked me and never gave me a fair shot, and here's how I felt, and man, I was in a meeting and no one made eye contact with me and just treated me like I wasn't a star because I wasn't a star. Like, could you find somebody to say that around every program? Probably, right? Especially your more, lack of a better term, disgruntled employees, like the people who have been fired in this scenario at Colorado. Like, I'm not surprised that the people leaving aren't being like, yeah, Deion's the best. Love Deion. Yeah, he told me to leave, told me I wasn't good enough, but man, like, I love Deion. No, it's going to be like, I'm mad. I'm pissed off that this guy's telling me I'm not good enough and I'm going to end up having to basically transfer to a lower level school, because that is something else I've noticed at the people that have left Colorado. They haven't really gone.
No, it's true.
Anywhere good.
Yeah.
They do kind of suck at football. Like there is something true to the Colorado. When you talk about trimming the fat, like, it's really just, you know, I don't even know, for it's not even trimming fat. I don't even know what you would say, like, what they're doing to this program. Like, getting rid of all the bad players. Yeah. Like, the players suck. They're trying to get good players in. So, like, there's no easy way to do that in high-level college football. And let's face it, all of these Power 5 schools that aren't Vanderbilt and Northwestern are playing high-level football and playing, you know, big business, big chess, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah. No, I noticed that too, and I don't know if this was the original signing class that they had. The Athletics article mentioned that not one member of the original 31-man signing class is still playing there. I mean, it's pretty amazing, and that's the part that has to be tough, though. If you're a kid that is, you know, being recruited to come in, and then after that, it's where is the commitment? And this is different than what we're talking about with the NIL era in college sports. This is more, if you were actually being recruited by someone to come in, you got to believe there's some level of commitment that's coming from the coach and the program to you, the recruit. Doesn't seem like it happens here. It just feels like tryouts all the time, basically.
And look, is that going to lead to having better players and a better roster? Yes, like, I think Colorado's roster is better now than it was 2 years ago. I would probably venture to say pretty confidently it's better right now on May 1st than it was at the end of last season. Does that mean it's going to be a good roster? Does that mean they're actually going to win enough games to justify just being, you know, this cold-blooded? To be determined. But what I can't defend is just Shador. And, like, it's twofold, right? Like, Shador Sanders, you are the son of the head coach.
Right.
You don't really want children of your head coaches arguing with players on social media. Like, you know, you think back to, like, Nick Saban's daughter whenever he retires, her going out and arguing with people on Twitter. And I just kept thinking about how mad Nick Saban would be had he known this. Like, I imagine that phone call that he eventually gave his daughter is like, what are you doing? Stop. Stop arguing with people. Stop quote tweeting them with pictures of our beach house saying, like, you know, basically, we're going to, yeah, just retire and we're rich and you're not. Like, stop saying that. So you have Shador doing that from a kid's perspective of, like, hey, I'm defending my dad. But also, like, from a quarterback's perspective, like, as a team leader perspective, the quarterback's not supposed to be out here doing this either. The quarterback's supposed to be the boss, the leader, the face of the franchise, however you want to phrase it. Like, to me, it was just twofold, just bad on both ends.
Yeah.
Like, if Nico was out here doing that, like, hey, bro sucked. Yeah, see you later, transfer. Like, I mean, you've seen it with the basketball transfers. Like, no one's been like, hey, this teammate sucked. See you later. Have fun at George Mason. Hey, good luck, Freddie, at Penn State. You suck. You didn't try hard enough here. Like, no one's done that. So I'll be like, hey, best of luck, man. Heart emoji, or, you know, share your post. We support you. We're brothers. Meanwhile, you got Shador, the face of the program, being like, yeah, this guy was terrible. bleep him, essentially.
There's just a different level of decorum here, you know? I mean, I think about that. I think about the basketball program. And I mean, it's not fully analogous because basketball roster is considerably smaller than football. But, you know, we talked about this, you know, now we know. But when we talked about Tobe Awaka, some of the things we were hearing behind the scenes was maybe Tennessee did not want him as much as they were letting on, but they handled it differently, right? You know, Barnes talked in the press conference and said, look, we want him back, but he's got to make a decision, like, now. Whereas Deion does a totally different thing. Again, when I read this article, you know, his first move with the team is he walks in and has Tupac music playing behind him, All Eyes on Me, and all this. It's just like, it just feels like such a show, everything they're doing there. And everything has to be so, I mean, some of the players are talking about it that are leaving, of course, obviously, which was the catalyst for this article. But also, he makes no bones about it. He just likes, there's part of me that feels like he, you know, you could say it's shooting straight. I think some of it's ego, too, that he's just enjoying, you know, telling people, you're no good, you know, and I'm here to change it. That's how it's going to be. And I just think, I watch what happened, very small sample compared to what's going on at Colorado, but what happened here with basketball, it's very different, and I would rather it be the path that was taken here. It was kind of frustrating and painful, but you're dealing with kids, and like you said, John, you don't go out there and just bash the kid that's exiting. It's just not necessary.
The problem and the thing that is appealing of Deion Sanders is the same thing. This is kind of the same thing that makes you laugh, makes you cry type of mentality. But, like, what makes Deion Sanders Deion Sanders is that he is brash and loud and cool and, like, authentically himself. But I think there's a reason you don't see a lot of college football coaches act that way. It's harder to get away with that leading a college athletic program, because you have to be more of a measured CEO type. And, like, Deion's being authentically himself. I'm not saying it's not going to work. I'm not saying he has to change and do things more buttoned up, do things more of the white way, or however you want to phrase it. Like, because I know, like, with Deion, like, there'll be race conversations on the way people handle him and the way people are going to root for or root against him and how he's going to be covered moving forward. It's just a big part of the equation when it comes to Deion. But, like, it does make things tougher on him when it comes to the media and, like, the rest of the country watching this program when he is sitting up there discussing transfers, basically calling them sorry, basically calling them slaw, saying, who's leaving? Backups. They suck. We good. And just keep saying, we good, we good. Like, that's Deion being Deion. And again, I'm fine with him being himself. And it's worked for him in his life up until this point. Who am I to give him advice? But it opens himself up for criticism when he's not taking the buttoned up, hey, we wish them the best.
Yeah.
That's what every coach pretty much would have said. Like, hey, we wish them the best. Sometimes players don't, you know, fit here. Hey, I'm having to overcome, you know, years of bad recruiting here. Look, you fired this coach before me for a reason. He wasn't very good. It didn't work out. I'm having to build this program. I'm having to take certain measures. In college football, you don't get the benefit of a five-year rebuild anymore. The transfer portal, you got to do it now, now, now. Even if you want to make it if you're Deion and you want to make it a statement on the society's thirst for instant gratification, go that way. Hey, I'm having to take drastic measures because guess what? If it's year three and I'm still not winning, no one's going to be patient with me. They're going to say I can't coach. People want wins. You can even go that route. But instead, he's like, no, these guys are sorry. We're going to be fine. They suck. Trust me. We're good. And that is Deion again, being Deion, but it's also Deion inviting a lot of criticism. And what you start seeing, Bob, is you start seeing those buzzards slowly start forming in the air above the Colorado program. And the animal's not dead yet. The buffalo, what's his name, Ralphie? Ralphie's not dead yet, but he's got that real slow walk. He's been hit with a couple bullets and arrows, and he's walking. He's bleeding out. He might live. He might end up winning 7 or 8 games and proving everyone wrong. He might end up staying alive. But those buzzers are starting to circle the program, waiting on it to die so they can start picking the carcass. Because that's what the media and that's what the fans and that's what the internet is going to do to this program.
Yeah, well put. I think that this goes back to what we talked about just yesterday, is like if Deion is not with Colorado after next season, where does he go if you're an athletic director? Again, I was making the comment that there's probably some athletic directors foolish enough to see, like, oh, he can breathe life into a program. I don't know what would be next for him, whether it's college, whether it's pro, not as a head coach, but I really am kind of at a crossroads of what could be next for him professionally.
You know, maybe this isn't a good comparison, but to me, they do kind of match up personality-wise, level of fame, level of success as players. But, like, how many games into his career, how many games into the season did Magic Johnson just pack it up and quit coaching the Lakers that year? Like, he just kind of decided, like, hey, this isn't for me. I don't want to lose. I'm not built for this. He did the same thing decades later as an executive. You know, you remember the video of him outside, like, hey, I quit. I resign. And then making the jokes about Jeannie asking about meetings, and I'm not going to be there. Like, because some guys just don't take losing well, and some guys don't take criticism well, and some guys don't like the process. And, like, there's a reason that star players aren't always coaches.
It's true.
So, like, you ask where he's going to be, like, I think there's, like, a 20% chance, 25% chance he's in Colorado next year. Greener pastures, going somewhere else and coaching, that's sure, maybe that's possible. Getting fired, that's unlikely, but, like, possible on the table if they go 3-9 and he just kind of just makes a habit of arguing with the media and arguing with people the entire time on the way out after every loss, that's possible. But also, like, I think in the back of my mind, I can also see him just saying, like, hey, my health, my foot, the stress, I'm good. I retire. I think that's on the table.
I'm just looking at their schedule this coming season. We talked yesterday about North Dakota State being their first game, which they could lose. At Nebraska, at home against Colorado State, or no, at Colorado State, at home against Baylor, at UCF, at home against Kansas State. I mean, the Big 12, it's not the SEC or the Big 10, but it's strong enough. I don't know how many games they'd even be favored in right now.
I'll try to get their win total. I'm imagining it's going to be around 4.5, 5.5, somewhere around there. Maybe a little inflated because it is a program you care about.
Yeah.
But, like, last year we paid attention to them because of intrigue. We pay attention to them because we wanted to see what would happen. Could this coach that we all know, that we all have liked at some point as a player, can he actually coach at this level? Hey, he did pretty good at Jackson State, but how can he do it at Colorado? And he comes out and he beats TCU week one, and everyone's like, oh, wow, here we go. And, you know, they had a little bit of a run of actually, like, people thinking they were a good team until Oregon absolutely destroyed them. Year two, that's not the case. Year two, we're here for good old-fashioned hate. I don't know if you listened, Bob, to Kendrick Lamar's diss of Drake yesterday.
I did not.
He dropped 6 minutes of a response, a diss track to Drake. Did you listen to it, Sam?
I did, yeah, I did.
At the 3-minute mark, eventually, Kendrick's like, you know what, I just hate you. Like, I hate the way you dress, I hate the way you walk, you're corny, like, I just hate you.
He was hateful.
Yeah, like, it's like, I'm not going to just rap and do this in bars, like, I'm just going to be very basic and straight to the point. I hate you, I hate everything about you. And that's kind of like, I think we're kind of there with the Colorado program as outsiders. Like, we're here year two. We're ready to hate. We got our popcorn ready. We got our silk on. We're ready to go to the player haters ball. Like, we are ready just to laugh at them every chance we get. At least that's how I feel. Year one, I kind of rooted for Deion. But everything he's done really since the Oregon game, or even before the Oregon game, where those players out there talking trash, like, calling their stadium small, saying they're small players, and, like, Dan Lanning kind of put Deion's program in a casket as far as I was concerned. Like, I knew they were going to beat them, but, like, the way he talked about them afterwards, like, hey, they're doing it for clicks.
Yeah.
They're a YouTube program. Like, that's kind of true. Like, they're a social media program, and, like, that's the only way I think of them now. I'm ready to hate. I hate the way Deion is coaching this program. I hate the way Shador carries himself. And, like, I'm there, and I don't want to be there. I like the popular athletes. I like people with style and substance and all this, but the problem is you got to have substance, and I'm not sure this Colorado program has any of that.
Now, I'll admit, last season when they got, 4-0, I was kind of intrigued going, hey, man, this might be the future of college football, the way it's being set up.
Oh, man, I hope Deion doesn't go to Florida. I mean, we're saying that even. To Florida. They'll get chewed up and spit out in the SEC.
But then I started hearing the stories about Shador driving a Maybach and Shador having multiple cars and all this other stuff. It just got to be too much. And then I found myself last season, after what Oregon did, and I loved what Lanning did, I started rooting against them then. And it's only perpetuated now. I'm with you this year. That's what we're watching.
Yeah, for me, people got mad at Shador when he started flashing, his Rolex and, doing the watch thing. That didn't bother me. I have no problem with trash talk. Like, the student section chanting at him, cussing him, and I have no problem with him giving it back. I got no problem with him driving a Maybach. Like, he's the son of a rich dad. Plenty of people are in that same situation. Actually, and even he's gone as far as even earning it and being a good player. To me, it's not about Shador until yesterday. I thought that was a misstep from him. I thought the putting down Texas recruits was a weird thing, too. Whenever he's, acting like he got it out of the mud because he, went to private school. That's a blessing. That's not a curse. I don't know. I just thought he had a couple missteps there. The end of Hour 2 is brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, veneers, Invisalign, they can do it all for you. Take care of your mouth. Dental health is important. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff, they want to help you. Do just that at Knoxville Smiles. Contact them today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. Hour 2 in the books. Hour 3 coming at you. Rev up your